Are we announcing that Barry's in the room? I say we do.
I mean,
in case
does this feed into the local cop shop? Because I don't want them to know where I am.
Yeah. Then.
I do not think that will be.
We'll say hello.
Well, since we're on the air, they kind of know that he's here.
That's true.
I think we should.
From all the heavy breathing, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that the voice pattern. Your voice is lower than mine.
Is it really?
Okay.
Yeah.
It is, actually.
It's like right here. It's
yeah.
Like
here. Right now, particularly.
Right now, because I've been talking for the last 72 hours
yeah.
straight.
We're doing it. We're live.
Yep. Okay.
And believe me, mine is low, so that's saying something.
So we just forced the listening audience and whoever listens to our podcast to listen to 43 seconds of us blathering.
Well, it's a gentle upswing.
Some might consider the entire show blathering, so whatever.
It's true.
You know.
I'm sure they would.
Feedback this week, by the way.
That's
a plus or a minus.
I'm a little frightened.
No Alan Smithy. We made fun of Alan, but
we like Alan. We're
still a fan of the show.
Yeah, it's good.
At least on our page.
So he hasn't defanned himself.
I don't know if he's listened.
So maybe he just didn't have enough to comment about. So we'll have to give him more to talk about.
Sure. We've got to get controversial.
Just say virtual
here.
Money 15 times in a row. That will probably get out.
You think that'll do it?
Yeah.
All right.
Actually, let's talk about.
I'll get a rise out of you, Alan Smithy.
Let's.
careful.
Oh, I didn't mean it like that.
I know.
Are you sure?
Our listenership just went up. We could talk about the Dust Bowl.
Our listeners just went up. Is that what you said?
You just said that.
See? Here we go again.
Sorry. Okay, get to it.
This was called playing doctor.
My pithy joke was going to be Dust Bowl. Let's make Dust Bowl jokes that we know are terrible, and you can say it was all virtual money back then. That would get Alan.
Oh yeah.
Right on the website.
Okay.
All right. So this is what's left.
What's left
for March 26th, 2009 on isgoodradio.com.
Right.
Live in the hizzy.
Yeah, we're live, and we're also on Podomatic. This will be posted about
P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C.
And you've been very good about posting it, I have to say.
Yeah, I know. The Podomatic
quite
thing
diligent.
Is like clutch.
Yeah.
And we also have Barry O'Rourke in the house now. He's our photographer.
Hello there. How's it going?
Nice.
He's directly from Dublin, can't you tell?
Right. Not from Dublin, I'm from Sligo, Ireland.
Oh!
But nobody knows where Sligo is. I was trying to help
you. Yeah, I do.
Right.
I know where it is, and I'm trying to keep it a secret.
Well, that's why you're in California.
Nobody knows I'm here.
Right.
Well, now they do.
Yeah. Now they know you're from Sligo, and that narrows it down.
Don't mention that name, really. It brings on nausea.
Cops are coming.
All right. So,
duly noted.
And the cops thing as well that we mentioned earlier.
Duly noted.
Okay, let's do our introductions. This is good. I'm sorry. What's left on is good. You are?
I'm Stephen Adams.
And you are?
Katrina Miller.
And I'm Greg Maratea. And we're here to talk politics. We've already done our witty banter.
That was witty.
What masquerades for witty in this crowd.
All
right, what's the story, Morning Glory?
I don't know. Steve came most prepared.
Well, so, you know, not I know really. I just have a lot of printouts, but I mean,
do you want to launch with budget? Do you want
to
launch with Obama talking?
The obvious,
internet.
Which is, Barry Obama was everywhere.
He was everywhere.
Yeah, he was.
And on the internet, like
today,
a banshee.
That was the icing on the overkill cake.
10,000 submissions.
Mm-hmm. No, 100,000.
Oh, 100,000. God, I heard at the moment 10,000.
Well, they narrowed the question. The 3 million people voted on the questions and narrowed them down to a small list.
All right.
And he answered them all.
Yes.
Is that better than American Idol?
Legalizing marijuana, which he laughed about. And then
he dodged. I wanted him to give us a straight answer on that, but he totally dodged it.
We were the one thing that we saw this week was Barack Obama, the politician.
Yeah.
That was... Yes, his ability to
well,
not
had
answer
to be.
A question was
well. I think
was
you know when
see.
You think about it, he got out of Washington just in time to let Nancy Pelosi stink up the place with that stupid taxation idea.
Wait, which one? Which one?
You
is
know,
it now?
Taxing these bonuses.
The AIG bonuses.
The AIG bonuses and many others.
I like how that's a dead issue.
I know how
is
fast.
A dead issue this week.
Well, because once we split it open and understood, okay, many people that got these bonuses were actually hired after the debacle, and were there to help clean up, and those were their deals. Yeah. That's why. But nobody ever explained this. It just people went into the firestorm, and everybody started riding it and playing politics. Yeah. That was we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
That was the big mistake. They missed the nuance and the facts.
Right.
Once the facts emerged, that only a handful of people were there during the time that this madness occurred. it made sense that people would say, no, I'm not giving my bonus back. I actually earned this.
Right. Well, I think it makes sense anyway, because not only would they say they earned it, but they think they earned, you know, way more than probably we agree that they should have earned.
Right.
So, yeah, but this is just a whole separate group, a type of people, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Who are getting millions of dollars in bonuses.
They're a seven-figure crowd.
I mean, I don't even think I could do that. If someone tried to give me a bonus that large, I'd be like, what?
Oh, I sure.
Oh, I'd take it.
Yeah.
I don't blame them.
Right.
This is America.
And that's why I don't blame them in a way, because that's what they're used to.
Oh, and to a certain, I agree with you.
You know
that.
What I mean?
I also think that the fury died down a teeny bit because the freight train that is the first 100 days just just kept going.
Keeps on rolling.
Yeah. It didn't stop for...
There's too much more to talk about.
But at least he was clever enough to let that, you know, Pelosi-led idea...
Die.
And separate himself from it.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
So I'm watching this footwork now, and I'm going,
He was never connected to it.
He was never connected. Well, this is the interesting thing. I'm really noticing this disconnect between Congress and the president.
Well, that's
even more and more.
Yeah.
Well, he's on his own.
He's definitely on his own.
It's beyond the Clinton triangulation strategy. Barack and his people know he's got his own set of approval, like his own set of fans, and the Democrats in the House and Senate don't.
Right.
And then the Republicans will never be a part of it. So he's got the automatic triangulation with him at the top of the pyramid.
Right.
Just completely kicking ass.
Yeah, and really kind of, you know, amazingly, despite all this madness around
us. Yes, yes.
It's like crazy. A separate pyramid.
It really is.
You know?
He's like, yeah, he's...
They're just not even connected.
No.
Which is, I mean, you know, it's. I guess it's okay for right now, but I really would like to see a little more communication.
I would too.
A little more kind of give and take between Congress and the executive.
We keep going back to Nancy Pelosi as the boogeyman, but I mean, it's hard not to... Look at her actions from the beginning as a sort of like, she's a skilled politician. She darted out of the gate and just started doing things that she never, I don't know whether she considered the eventual consequences or not. It's very strange to me.
Oh, she has to. She's not.
Yeah, she wasn't born yesterday, that's for sure.
Yeah,
she's not Chris Dodd or anything.
Chris Dodd ought to have learned from his father's mistakes, but that's
you
a whole
think?
Discussion.
True. But no.
I feel a little bit bad for Chris Dodd because
I do too.
Treasury really did ask him to water down the provision on bonuses.
But now we understand why they were motivated.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why someone didn't just explain, beyond saying they were legally obligated, because that was not the answer anybody wanted to hear.
Well,
it had to be explained with a little more nuance. And people can actually handle nuance, people, believe it or not. The American public can handle it.
I agree with you. I think that they did under Clinton.
Yes.
They understood nuance under Bill
Clinton. They understand it all the time.
I think some people understand
nuance.
They
didn't understand. No, I think if the president wants to make the issue a blunt yes or no, there's only a false choice like George W. Bush did, the public believed that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
When Bill Clinton says, you know what, I'm going to keep the death tax or whatever you want to call it, the estate tax, because look at what you lose... What you net from
right.
what you lose from it, people go, you know what, until I'm a millionaire, I'm for it. But when you're either for us or against us, I mean, the public follows.
I think
the
that's
president.
More how they think about it, though. It's how it's going to affect me. And it affects
right.
me, I agree with what you're saying, or I'm going to go along with what you're trying
right.
to do.
Right.
Right.
If it doesn't affect me, or I don't want to think about it,
right.
they don't know what's
that's
going
true.
On.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, no offense.
Well, getting back to
the listening public.
I also don't think it was subtle versus not. I think that the Obama White House miscalculated the impact of the bonuses. I think that they saw Merrill Lynch... And said those were way worse.
Could have been.
And it
was worse. And there was controversy. Mm-hmm. It went away quickly because, as you said, we were living through some kind of bizarre time warp that where just cataclysmic events are unfolding at the speed of light, and we can't even digest them. I sit here and I print out these stories on a daily basis, and I'm like, how do I even process this?
I know
when there things are such monumental consequence.
And you forget what happened yesterday.
And I forget what happened the day before.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know.
It's crazy.
And it's hard to connect the dots and see a bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I like about what's going on now is I remember the first concept of the 100 days that I encountered was retrospective on Reagan's first 100 days. I didn't realize how significant they were until I saw a documentary on
it.
And Reagan had this amazing first 100 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess it goes back to FDR had some amazing first 100 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so... That became a benchmark. And then the second time I really became aware of it was Clinton, in all earnest, you know, eagerness, wanted to have this revolutionary first 100 days, which turned
into work so well.
Firestorm.
Yes. But then,
and one which essentially never went away when you think about it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, because the Whitewater stuff started not very long into that period.
If he didn't do the Monica Lewinsky thing, what he could have done with his second term was amazing.
Would have been incredible.
Yeah. He was poised. He had a huge percentage of approval from the country. He was ready to move, and he had Republicans in Congress to keep him in check. It would have been amazing.
But they hounded him right into that little bear trap because, you know, it was, you know,
what was he thinking?
He forgets that it wasn't the blowjob, my dear. It was the lie.
Yeah, I know.
But it's also the stupidity of getting the blowjob when the
spotlight's
right on you. Like Gary Hart
dared
people to take the photographs of him that undid him.
That undid him. But they forgot that we were just about to enter the era that we're in right now where all that restraint and that sort of like there's a line drawn. That was ending then.
Yes.
And we, but, you know, again, we're going back to Clinton. We knew that he'd had affairs, extramarital affairs, before he was president.
Yeah.
Jennifer
Even
Flowers was on a secret.
We did. He denied them. I believe that.
And he didn't inhale either, so.
Yeah.
He didn't.
You know, keep that all in mind.
By the way, our current president has a line in one of his books that said something like, "That night we did some blow."
What?
And yeah, in one of his things.
Well, he talks very frankly about having really enjoyed drugs for a long time.
We've got to get those clips. Have you guys heard the audio clips of his books?
No.
They are priceless. You haven't heard them?
No.
We're going to get them on next show.
We're going to get the drug-related stuff and play that.
Well, there's not even drug-related stuff. There's like dramatic reading of some of his stuff.
No.
Very Barry. Very Barry.
Wow.
Almost Marion Barry.
I love the fact that he's so... Well, yeah, if he continues on another path, it could have been very much like...
What's going on with Marion Barry these days?
I don't know.
What
that crack-smoking mayor.
He has not been in the limelight recently.
Your boy, Blagojevich, has a radio show.
I know. I love that.
Yep. But wait. Let's just get back to the concept of the first 100 days. The Nixon-Ford component of W's administration had a very productive first 100 days. They undid the tax code, blah, blah, blah. It was, you know, animus, anything Clinton goes out the window. But, like, without designing it as a stage show, just through sheer determination, Obama's having a ridiculously revolutionary first 100 days, which is why AIG, which was, you know, pitchforks and torches at the gates of Congress last week, is just... They can backtrack off it, let it die, and go on to the next issue, because his first 100 days is not by design. Like, not a public relations design. It's by design that I'm changing.
Yeah,
you look at the Wilderness Act that he just passed that's protecting huge tracts of land.
Yeah.
More than George Bush did in his entire 8 years in one fell swoop. I mean, so a lot of really good things are happening, too.
I agree.
And that was one of the things I got out of my fear and anxiety was to start... As we kept saying, you know, look at the calendar in the reality.
Give him some time.
Get off the amphetamine and chill out. But, I mean, this thing is still shaping, and I don't know. There's still...
See, I fundamentally have come to a conclusion. I fundamentally disagree with he's only been in... And he used that, by the way, all week long.
Said
look,
that.
I've only been around for a short
it's
period of time.
It's only been 60 days.
But what he's planning on doing is a 10-year blueprint for the government. What he's planning on doing is bailing out, you know, something on a level we've never seen before. So forget about, like, the turnaround the economy thing. What you're passing now has implications well beyond just being in office for 60 days, which is what he kept saying over and over again.
Of course.
Yeah.
The politician was amazing. The Obama politician this week was sharp and played the game like every politician, much to the dismay of purists, I'm sure, but he was...
Politician,
you
know,
as,
entertainer.
As Mario Cuomo
he was back
said,
to Reagan.
As Mario Cuomo said very famously, we campaign in poetry and we govern in prose.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
The pretty words are falling away and now the hard talk is starting.
Which one do you want to tackle? You have the announcement of the bailout the Geithner, by the way, comeback kid.
I knew he was going to.
If we were, you know, listen, you talk about Obama being a shrewd politician. Do you think that it would have been wise for him to have this man resign this early. It would have been such a sign of weakness. It would have been such a sign of inconsistency.
And they knew there was something going on behind the scenes that we did not see.
Right.
And you know, that whole line about I didn't want to say anything until I knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that represents a lot more than just what Obama is saying. I think it's a lot about what's going on with the administration that we don't understand.
Right.
There's
right.
stuff going on back there. Like we were talking about the State Department, too. I think there's stuff going on that we're just not apprised to yet.
We're not apprised.
And that's their design, and we just don't know what it is quite yet.
The Geithner's plan, I was dismayed, as you know, because I kept sending you guys all the op-eds about how everybody at the New York Times hated it.
Yeah. The New York Times.
I finally heard the Paul Krugman complaint on Charlie Rose. One of the most amazing Charlie Roses in the history of Charlie Rose. His basic thing is it's not going to work.
Because it's not enough?
It's trying to find value in things that really don't have a value. It's saying that they're eventually going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And his argument is twofold. God bless you.
Bless you.
His argument is twofold. Bless you.
Bless you again.
Is that you're hoping that someone's going to believe that we're going to reach the bubble prices, that these assets will be worth something because we're going to reach bubble asset values, which is not going to necessarily happen very soon.
I guess that's not totally the way I interpreted
it. That's not how I interpret it either. We're on the same wavelength with that.
But the other thing was that it's you still have a zombie bank scenario because, and this is why I kind of came around on the plan. Krugman's like, no one's going to sell their stuff on 30 cents on the dollar. They want at least 60 cents, which is what they're valuing it at now to stay solvent. By not selling a toxic asset, a bank can say this is worth 60% of its face value, and they don't look insolvent on paper. The second the market determines that it's only worth 30 cents on the dollar, they become insolvent, which, to me, the whole point of this plan is that then the case for nationalizing banks is made by the market.
Mm-hmm.
What Obama's saying is, We're gonna have auctions, and in these auctions, people are gonna bid on toxic assets. We're gonna open up to the bad guys, to the hedge funds, to everybody who wants to make
money. The toxic assets have been separated from the banks themselves at that point. So
this is the other part that Krugman said. Now you're gonna go to a bank and allow them to pick which of their toxic assets they hold and which ones they don't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he felt that there should be a mechanism that forces them to divorce themselves of all toxic assets or a certain level. There should be a certain criteria.
There has to be. Otherwise,
But the point is, what Obama does is he says, here, I'm establishing a market, or Geithner. I'm going to establish a market. People are going to bid on these. That is going to determine the price. So now it's mark to market, truly, because the market is going to bid on it.
Right.
We're going to back that thing up with $6 out of $8. You know, 85% is guaranteed from one part of the government, and then on the down payment we it's like one of those I hate percentages. Of the remaining 15%, 80% is backed by another part of the government.
Right.
All right. So the genius in this politically for me was it gets this out of Congress, who can't vote for another $1 trillion anything.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's done by fiat. It's done by policy that you can't touch. Second is, it does. It says to all the right-wingers, it says to all the left-wingers, it says to the country, a market is being made where there once was none. These things, I think, are smart. What it does, though, is it either forces some banks to opt to be zombies, or it is the way in which Obama says, I have to nationalize these banks, because the auction liquidated their assets.
And is it a total bank zombification, or is that a partial bank zombification?
It depends on which ones you want to get involved.
Right, and I mean, the way I interpreted it, it was only partial for most of them. Like, very few, especially considering who's already gone down at this point.
Right.
It was actually more a percentage. You could, this would keep you afloat, this percentage of what you had that was decent would keep you afloat, while the
toxic
assets.
The answer is, on some banks, that's not going to work.
Right.
Like Citi, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, when they're done selling their toxic assets at 30 cents on the dollar, they are insolvent.
Okay.
And those are the big ones that have to be nationalized, and that's a huge amount of money.
But it's not going to completely go for 30 cents on the dollar with the government pitching in.
The government's not affecting the bidding. The government's not affecting the bidding. That's what Krugman was saying.
Uh-huh.
You're hoping that people are going to bid these things up to 60 cents on the dollar.
They can't, and they won't.
And they won't. And they're really only 30 cents on the dollar, at which that point the bank says, I'm not selling it. I don't want to go insolvent. I don't want to take this money from the government. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be subject to the scrutiny.
But I don't understand how they can make that determination when the government would be setting a price and separating these assets before they're auctioned.
They're not setting the price before. There will be a determination on which assets go into the auction.
Right.
Auction starts at zero.
But isn't there a compensation prior to the removal of these assets?
No. The only compensation.
See, that's what I thought. Yeah. There was something that the government was helping out with before
the healthy
bidding.
Portion of the bank is left, and this is no longer a problem of theirs.
No.
See, this is where I'm confused.
No, no.
I thought there was a complete excisement of these.
No. The government's not putting up a dime until the auction happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, it's 85% is backed by a loan from the government.
Okay. I had it backwards then.
But what the government is doing is apparently the loan servicers, the companies that make money on taking the payments or whatever, need to be appeased in this. So they're paying them off.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying them off to get them out of the business. Otherwise, for some reason, there's no reason for them to want to let these loans go for whatever reason.
Right.
But the other part is that who really wants to buy, you know, a bundle of loans from Los Angeles from 2007, 2006?
Right.
I mean, I don't. I don't want to bet on 30 cents on a dollar.
That's
I want
when
bet
they should
that
go to the government.
So he's basically, what I think the genius of this is and why I came around is it's not designed to completely work. It's designed to put $1 trillion at what it can. Mm-hmm. Everyone says it's a $2.75 to $4 trillion problem. You already have the Fed buying $1 trillion worth of Fannie Mae stuff. Like, so there's $1 trillion there. Here's another trillion for a select number of these assets. Then when everyone goes insolvent, your hand is forced.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to put the other $2 trillion into the system. No votes, no voter outrage. No demagogue, no Nancy Pelosi. It just
happens.
Pretty
key when that has to happen. That's why the Fed has to take care of it.
She'll get her comeuppance at some point. and it's funny because a lot of right wingers are saying that if she didn't exist, they would invent her. You
know? It's so sad, too, because I feel like Nancy Pelosi's a victim of being a woman. Successful.
I don't agree with that at all.
Horrible,
that's
isn't
really,
yeah.
That's an
overly
oversimplification.
And it
dismisses some of the things that she does as a person.
She's
whether
a powerful
she's a woman or a man.
And when she comes off as a powerful woman, people don't like
it's
her.
It's not a question of her power. She is not.
It's her decisions and the way she's going about
Thank
them.
You.
She could be a man. She could be looking just as stupid.
I think if a man did this, it would be different than if it was a woman.
I don't think so.
I think there's a
powerful woman like her.
Wow.
Comes across.
I can't believe you're bringing sexism
into this issue
when it doesn't even.
And I'm a woman.
You're playing the sexism card, and that's just so inappropriate.
Totally. No, but that's my feeling.
I also think that's one of the reasons
why people hated Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton didn't stay at home and bake cookies when her husband was out.
They hated her as a first lady.
I think Hillary and Nancy are a little bit different in the way they come across personality-wise.
Yeah.
And I think maybe what we're talking a little bit about here is the personality aspects as opposed to the political
actual... But I think
actual...
that the personality aspect can't be divorced from the fact
no.
that she's a female.
No, not completely. But I don't think what we're talking about with Nancy Pelosi has anything to do with her being a woman or baking cookies or... her particular personality.
I think it's her political decisions.
It's what she is trying to do politically that is causing us to talk about
it.
And the way she's doing it.
There's a certain amount of vanity, and there's a certain amount of well, I'd call it vanity.
And in the disconnection with the administration.
That's exactly right.
Well, yeah.
And that's not a female issue. It's an issue of this person's character.
I don't think that's a large percentage of why people don't like Nancy Pelosi.
I think that Eric Cantor and John Boehner are two of the most
horrifying personalities on the political scene, and they don't get the backlash, the wrath of people like Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is a freaking poster child for people who don't like. I mean, she is, and I think it's because she's a woman.
I don't think so.
Wow.
I think it's just because
that's
of what she's
oversimplification.
Doing.
I think that you have to look at what she's done to undermine her president. That's
mm-hmm.
my issue with her.
That was destined to happen.
And what
and
she feels
she
like
hasn't
she deserves.
Really undermined
I beg to differ.
Obama on one day said, if you're talking about the bonuses, on one day Obama said...
That's a big deal.
Yeah, but time out. On one day he said, I'm directing Tim Geithner to take any legal action he can to get the money back.
Yes.
And then the next day, the House, under her direction, writes the legislation and passes legislation. Which
new legislation, as opposed to working within the existing law. Very different things.
But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter to me.
You still have Republicans. You had 380 something votes for that.
Yeah.
That means that 100 and something in Republicans.
Everybody was succumbing to the populist fire.
That's not Nancy Pelosi's problem.
Oh.
The House is a weather vane. The House turns on a dime.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do.
All right.
I mean, I could be wrong. Look, listen. I wish we had a more friggin' popular. I wish
I still
Tim
think
O'Neil
I
right
still
now.
Think there's a disconnect between Congress and the administration. I think there's something very wrong here.
I don't know. I think that the administration wants you to think there's a disconnect between them.
No,
and the
I don't think they're playing it up at all. I think if anything, the administration really wants to have connection. And unfortunately, it's just not working out that way now.
See, I think that the administration is using the House Democrats like the Bush administration used the House
Republicans,
which is get the dirtiest, base-oriented
but they have to.
Issues out through them.
Right.
They have to.
And then moderate it a tiny bit in the Senate.
And pretend to be above
it. And pretend
entire...
to be above it.
Yeah.
And when it comes to Democratic wish list that Damaris told us about, for the pent-up demand for 20, 25 years,
mm-hmm.
some of that is ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing the heavy lifting on the ugly side for them,
right.
And they get to stand above it. When they do back away from some things that they were for.
Barely, though. I think they're taking responsibility for the good, the bad, the ugly. Everything is getting pushed through right now. The administration is taking full responsibility for it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them back off of much.
I mean, are you guys talking about, by the way, the disconnect between, I think it's like in a $3.6 trillion budget, the difference between 3.6 for the White House and 3.45 for the House and Senate? Because
where this drama began,
I'm not
in my
talking
mind,
about that.
Was, you know, I felt there wasn't there meant to be some inclusiveness, some bipartisan involvement in this budget? Instead, it was being written under Nancy's auspices with, you know, things that we understood would be interesting to the other side, but not with their actual participation.
You're talking about the blueprint for 10 years?
Yes.
That's
and there was bipartisan, you know, earmarks.
I know there were 9,000 of them. 48% of them were Republican.
And it was bipartisan. Everybody got some.
I agree with you. I mean, right now I don't see daylight between the House and the White House on this budget that they're working on as we speak.
No, but I'm not necessarily talking about just the budget. I mean, it's more of a communication kind of thing, and it's more of a message kind of a thing.
Well, they're definitely sending two different messages.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, but Nancy's got to get reelected.
I know.
In 2 years.
I know.
And right now, the White House is playing for, like, well, we'll survive the losses in the midterm. And she's like, no, we're not going to survive. We're gonna do the ugly things that keep us in power.
Right. Well, they've got different goals, different short-term, long-term goals.
Yeah. I know.
Should we hear a clip?
This is going to be, we're kind of in the zone where my clips are about.
Okay. I just don't want to go too far before we
can't
get one of those
clips
in there.
This is what I'm thinking. Are you leaving?
Yes, I've had enough.
Leaving.
I've had enough of your vanity and narcissism. I've had enough of it.
It's all narcissism.
I got to go look at myself for the next hour now.
There's a mirror on your way out the door.
Yes.
Thank God.
I know exactly what they are.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll let you know how it all hangs out.
Right on. Thank you. That was Barry O'Rourke, everybody.
Woohoo!
Hey, do you have a website?
He's from Sligo.
Do you have a website we can plug?
Wastedpictures.com.
Wastedpictures.com. You should... and we can plug... He also directed...
We can plug the show because it's music related.
Yes, okay.
Okay,
yes.
What are we talking about? Plugging
okay,
what?
So
wait,
first thing we're going to do is we're going to plug...
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Morceau de Moi, Jillian O'Neill is singing French songs with a sort of
cabaret, sort of like sort of like from the streets of Montmartre.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
No, you should get on the mic.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Don't
that'd
talk
be helpful.
Without the
okay,
mic.
Okay, so I'll plug the shameless plug. So I'm directing a little show over at the Casita del Campo. It's a little sort of club.
What's the address?
I actually do not know the address, but it's on
Hyperion.
It's on Hyperion. It's actually underneath the Casita del Campo. It's called the Cavern Club.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've been down there. It's cool.
It's a very cool Elizabeth space. Actually, they usually do a lot of drag shows there.
Mm. Hello.
But I have nothing to do with that part of it, of course.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
With that voice.
Could you pass
not
the ball,
looking
please?
Like this.
Pass my eyeliner, please. So my friend Jillian O'Neill is doing a little show called Morceau de Moi. It's on Friday and Saturday night at 9 o'clock
right.
and Sunday at 7 o'clock. And I had a small little hand in directing it.
Mm.
The show was actually already up and running as it was, but I sort of came in and gave my own little brand of humor and color to it. We have a little infusion of Dante's Inferno there and stuff. So it's
right. She's very, very cool. She's going to be roasted.
She's going to be even more tortured than she already is.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're the man for that.
And I love it. I love it. Yeah. So if you guys have an opportunity to stop by and come see it,
we should take a field trip.
Four tickets.
There's just a couple of tickets left. Just a couple.
A couple?
A couple of thousand.
They're going fast.
I bought four for Sunday night.
And if you want to check out our website, it's Jill Ann O'Neill. It's it's jillann.com. It's JILANN.
Okay.
.com, I believe.
That's a great website name.
Yeah, and she's a really, really cool singer. And she used to do a bunch of hair and makeup for the Hanson brothers.
I love those chicks.
I'm going just because of that.
The other guy.
They're really cool.
The other guy, Josh... Josh Groban.
He's
do his hair too. He's got fabulous hair,
he's
as we all
know.
He's
got great hair.
So
puffy.
We'll see
soft.
You guys there down at the Caravan Club on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Right on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Right on.
Right.
See you at the local.
Right on.
Yes, we will.
Indeed.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
That was Mike 13. Okay, so getting back to the show. Our thanks, by the way, to Barry.
Good work.
So I did pull some clips, and this is the reason why. So
you said matey in England. I mean, in Ireland.
That wasn't right. Never mind.
What did you say?
Nothing. Go on with the clips.
Okay. So this is the deal. I'm confused. I'm alarmed. I'm not quite sure. It doesn't make logical sense. The main feeling that the main reason why I've had that feeling is I don't understand when the spending stops. All budget estimates, CBO, even the administration estimates say we're going to get into some stratospheric budget deficit numbers that even in the face of what Reagan pulled off, which was
virtual.
Unheard of, is, I agree with you,
virtual
money, except for it's...
That's what's pissing China off right now.
Yeah, but it's upsetting the world.
And you saw their response to the situation.
Yeah, they were like, we might not buy...
They're suggesting a new global currency.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
they're
going a little further than might not buy.
That's because they're going down too right now.
They're going down too and they're angry.
Well, yeah. Their hedge against our power was owning our debt, and that's diminishing by the fact that we printed all this money.
Well,
but you know, and they're losing power on their. They're losing
it on their own. It's
on
a global problem.
But so I've been concerned about that, and I haven't been able to make head or tail of it. So I sent you guys the JPEG or the bitmap, whatever, of Obama, which was chill the F out. I got this, right? And that's actually from the campaign. But you have to basically have that faith in Obama to believe that we're not going to spend ourselves, virtually or not, into oblivion.
Well, the funny thing is I keep hearing, oh, we're not spending enough. They're not putting enough into it. So it's like, you know, who are you going to listen to? It's honestly, like I said, this economy budget math is way beyond what I can comprehend. But, freaking how many trillion do you want to say? 70, 50, 150? Right. Sure, throw it in. It's virtual.
Well, it is until...
It's virtual.
Everything's virtual
not
until
real.
The bet is called.
It's all equations until it, you know, really comes down to people
we are actually hitting some crazy levels. So, for me, that's why I pulled these clips. I said, in order to believe Obama, you have to believe the first three clips that I play here.
Okay.
I'm going to play them. Now, they're taken out of context, but they kind of go as if he said them all together.
Okay.
Two of them are from the press conference, and one is from 60 Minutes.
Okay.
All right.
The press conference from this past week?
Yeah, like 2 days ago.
Yeah. Okay.
So
there's so many, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, he's really working.
He's really communicating.
We should get to the fact that he is definitely unafraid to...
He is communicating.
To rock star it on television, to become the media star that he thinks he is.
He's not. Well, he is the media star that he thinks he is.
Yeah, he is.
Why not?
He's good at it, man. He looks good every time he gets up there, and I feel more confident every time I hear him talk.
Well, that was the part that was killing me, was that every time he spoke, I felt better about his policy.
Right.
And then I would listen to it and read it and
from other people talking about it, and you get more nervous.
This is what he proposed.
Keep remembering what I said before.
And you're like, oh, my God.
Animal spirits and mojo.
Look, the animal
if we get the
heat,
mojo working, baby, it can happen.
That's right.
You gotta have a positive attitude. You know, as much as I'm sort of winking when I say that, I do believe it actually, and I think that part of and everybody's been looking for that signal.
And that's when
and
virtual
got it,
trillions
and things change.
Work.
Well, and this is why I say that, you know. And I think we're all kind of saying the same thing here. If you have a credible leader, I mean, and this is where we go back to this thing where he's a lot like Reagan right now.
Yes.
Because Reagan came in and told us things and we believed them. And even though the economy started tanking, eventually it went back up. I mean,
right.
You know, sometimes I think that whatever the theories are that people put forward, they're irrelevant to what people believe. Because we manifest what we want to have happen.
I agree, except for...
If I were confident, I'd go out and spend a lot more money than I am right now.
That is true.
And that's a big factor.
That is true. But there's also, there is a hard, undeniable rule of gravity in economics. And he at the moment, is testing it.
Which is,
as he said, we want to bend those numbers. He's bending everything.
Virtual.
Much without breaking it.
I know.
It's virtual until the house of cards comes down.
I know.
And then
I know.
Then you're shit out of luck.
It's still there. And that's what economics is all about.
But right now,
what
they're doing is...
creating the correct curve, so in the end, you get the effect you want.
I know, but right now what they're doing are the stopgap measures you do when the virtual money comes due.
Uh-huh.
What they're doing right now are the crazy things you do that get you back into parity that don't make any sense, but you have to do.
Well,
like printing money.
That's why they're doing it.
Yeah. But the problem is when you've exhausted...
You just have to have the guts to do it.
When you've exhausted all of the things that are unheard of that you do to get yourself out of a shit situation...
Then we'll have to deal with the fact we're in total depression.
Yes.
But we're not there yet.
Yes. All right. So here are what you have to believe in order to... These quotes are what you have to believe in order to believe that Obama's not driving us economically into a ditch.
Okay.
Or over a cliff.
Okay. Don't you like how I respond like that? Okay, yes.
It is going to be a impossible task for us to balance our budget if we're not taking on rising health care costs. And it's going to be an impossible task to balance our budget or even approximate it if we are not boosting our growth rates. And that's why our budget focuses on the investments we need to make that happen. Because even if we were not doing health care, we were not doing energy, we were not doing education, they'd still have a whole bunch of problems in those out years, according to CBO projections. The only difference is that we will not have invested in what's necessary to make this economy grow. Now, none of us know exactly what's going to happen 6 or 8 or 10 years from now.
There's a potential silver lining, which may be that things are so accelerated now. The modern economy is so intertwined and wired that things happen really fast for ill, but things may recover faster than they have in the past.
All right. Did you hear those?
I remember him saying that.
So the basics are...
Mm-hmm.
In order to get to the targets we want to get to, I have to spend this money.
Right.
Right.
If you don't get health care, if you don't
and
trust...
And on certain things that you
these,
might not think is important right now.
These are the key
factors. But this is what... It's like the whole WPA idea.
Exactly.
It's just he's putting it into other things
into
right now.
Into technology. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily technology, but tools.
Yeah.
Instead of building bridges, he wants to educate us.
Right.
He wants us to stop killing the planet.
And health care.
And that which will drive a green economy, which mm-hmm. is technically in theory true. We could start selling things to China as they become a giant power that are green mm-hmm. technologies and or products. And then you have to be an educated workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Those are his principles. And then he says you have to get health care costs under control, which he's in that specific out of the context quote he was talking about. You have to rein in the entitlements. It's beyond his $600 trillion investment in health care. It's mm-hmm. really the entitlements. And then lastly, he says, who knows? Things go down really quickly now. Maybe things will come up faster than we believe. Mm-hmm. You have to believe in those three statements to go to sleep at night thinking that the projections that we're going to have $2 trillion annual deficits and double a $10 trillion debt in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And think like you have to believe those three statements in order to sleep well at night.
Well, I guess my question is, what's the other option? What is the other possibility? If we don't have ideas...
Not spending the money?
Well, no.
And
but
then what happens?
Yeah, then what happens? Because if we don't come up with something that's going to get people employed, it's going to get people with money in their pockets to be able to spend to create this circle moving again, then it's going to stop. And it's going to stop a lot sooner than what this is going to do.
All right, let me give you the counter-argument that I have in my head.
Okay.
Which is... I'll accept what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory that I've said tonight, which is he's using Geithner and the Fed is doing what they're doing to do things that don't have to be voted on that the public won't go for, right?
Right.
So spend the trillions of dollars to save ourselves from doom.
Right.
When is he going to be able to do the things that we need to do to rein in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security? When you have to, you cannot do that by policy. You have to pass it through Congress. Congress won't, in his judgment, spend the money it takes to save the banking industry that will in turn keep us from imploding.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to somehow rein in Medicare, Medicaid, entitlements?
Okay. So
no, they're not.
Do you want me to talk about that for a second? Let's talk about the fact that they're still talking about a medical health board. With the idea, and I think we've talked about this in a couple of shows in the past, with the idea being that it's like the Fed, and they will make the medical establishment system decisions,
right,
which will be to the side of Congress. And that is what has been suggested for the healthcare issues.
Right. That was Daschle's. You said you read that in Daschle's.
That's Daschle's idea. And I can't remember her name. Sebeling?
Sebelius.
Sebelius, yeah. She helped write that book. And so that's the idea. And it's just like the Fed. It's to the side of Congress. So those decisions can be made without Congress making those decisions. And I think that's probably the only way you're going to get that done.
But you
unless we have 9,000 more earmarks onto entitlements.
I agree with you, but then what you're talking about, then is, you because I don't think he's going to get the political will through the Nancy Pelosi's and the moderates that are banding together in the House and Senate to slow down his budget proposals.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get reform through Congress. What you're going to do is you're going to slow it down by slowing down the growth of healthcare costs in the country. That's what you're saying. You say the programs are not going to be touched. We're just going to actually, the things that they spend money on, we're going to control. We're going to control the cost of healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big bet. You have to believe in that board that he's that Fed for the healthcare
if
industry
it can get
in order to sleep well at night.
If it can get established, it can happen. Now, can it get established? I don't know. Is it going to go through Congress? Maybe with 9,000 more earmarks. It may happen that way, but that's the political game. And I don't know what they're going to use in terms of making these healthcare decisions in particular, but I do think it's possible, and I do know that American healthcare is out of control. And if it can be, even regionally or state by state, brought under better control, we could save a shitload of money.
All right. I mean, this is... I promise you. I've decided to give him the benefit of the doubt because he said in those out years there'll be tough decisions that we have to
make.
Right,
and that you know what the tough decisions are to pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies. And they're not going to like what's coming down.
But it's also...
You notice the insurance companies are already starting to try to make changes of their own,
right,
avoid bigger changes.
Exactly.
They did that to Clinton. They
and
removed
gonna...
the whole point of health care reform by dropping the growth rate under Clinton by 15% in a year,
and
or 7% in a year.
And that's where the lobbying has been taken out, attempted to take out, be taken out of this equation, because that is what damaged any past efforts to change health care at this point.
Right.
Because of the insurance and pharmaceutical lobbies. And if that can be taken out of the equation, things can change, and that's already happened.
I hope. I see lobbyists with power
on
a daily basis.
I don't have totally high hopes about this.
They're making concessions, trust me, they're still self-preservative.
Yeah, they're, yeah.
Yeah.
But we still have energy, and we still have education. We still have a lot of ways we can focus on this situation. And I think he's focusing on the right things to try to improve the situation overall.
Right.
To, like I said, to get the economy cycle moving.
That, I think, what you, there are two different things. What he's doing with Geithner to put a sort of, to cauterize, is that the correct way of saying that word? When you burn a wound closed?
Oh, cauterize.
Oh, cauterize.
To cauterize
the
wound.
I'm a doctor, too.
Yeah, thank you. What he's doing with Geithner and what the Fed is doing and what they're, even that crazy stimulus bill, that is for, you know, getting this business cycle sparked.
Right.
I completely understand that. What I've been really freaked out by is he's, I forget about like my whole, I got credit card debt that I've got to pay down. Therefore, when I hear about the government doing essentially the same, I start to freak out, which is basically what happens. I'm looking at my stuff. I'm like, I'm going to get this stuff down this year, right, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow, we're really running it up on a federal level.
Trillions.
We're going really deep on this. And then it gets worse. Mm-hmm. And then it goes worse. Forget about that. There's the sheer politics of tax and spend liberals that will have him saddled with the Republican Congress for the last 2 years of his first term.
Yep.
Which is, you know, maybe the only way he can pass Medicare reform is with a bunch of Republicans ready to fall on their swords. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't... when I listened to that, I said, I get it. I get where he's coming from. And like you said, they work behind the scenes, and we don't know what they're thinking until they reveal it, and then all of a sudden it actually has some form.
And I think everybody agrees on entitlement reform. Everybody. I mean,
except
Democrat
for when you tell the public that you're going to do... The easy fixes,
that.
The public are way against. If you raise the retirement age by a year, and if you change the rate of growth by like 0.5% to 1%, mm-hmm. they dramatically bring everything in line.
But we ought to raise the retirement age by 5 years.
Yeah, but when you mention that,
as long as healthcare is okay.
As long as healthcare is okay.
When you mention that, yeah, the public goes apeshit.
People are living longer. They work longer.
Yeah, and you know it's gonna
be hard.
It would
make a huge difference. 1 year, you're right. 1 year would make a difference. 5 years would make a huge difference.
But the thing is that when that's not politically tenable.
Well, okay, it depends on the situation you're in, and if you tell the public, and Obama may get good enough to be able to do this, but if you tell the public that, you know, look, it's either the Great Depression or we raise the retirement age 2 years, 3 years, right, whatever it is. You know, people may understand that kind of decision, and Congress may be able to do it. I still think that earmarks are never going to go out of this equation. I think we're not going to be able to write those
How
off.
How can they,
because
actually,
that's the only way you're going to get stuff like this through.
Yeah, the horse trading.
But honestly, honestly, I'm like, okay, fine. Just do it. Just get it done. Give everybody the little special interest stuff they need to do so we can get entitlement reform. And then move on and try to figure out what happened with all those earmarks. I mean, I guess that's my mentality.
I hear you.
I'd rather just get it done and then figure out, you know, on the back end how much crap happened in the way.
The reason why I dug up that picture of him that someone sent around right before the election, which was, chill out, I got this, is that that's what he's saying here.
Yeah, he's saying, what no he's one, saying like every week.
He's saying every week.
Yeah.
But he's got to stem the panic. Because a panic population...
Exactly.
Work right. in a positive direction.
And he's doing a great job.
People start to destroy things when they're in a panic.
Well, he
except
ran
if you're a Republican.
He ran up the panic bill as high as he could and then decided it was time to take it down a notch.
Well, I think he was told it was time to take it down a notch. I don't think he really had the understanding of that until he was told he needed to pull it down a peg.
I definitely think we all started feeling like it was being orchestrated.
Yeah.
I think he was part of...
Well, think about what he got. If you look at this budget like a ship, you know, just being pushed off of the dock, he got it going.
Yeah.
Under the panic mentality and the power of him doing 6 days worth of interviews.
Right.
That ship is on its way. And what when you guys are saying there's a disconnect, and I do agree there is many times a disconnect, especially between the House and the White House. What I'm starting to hear is the priorities aren't that much different. Even when the blue dogs are going apeshit about the price of what he's proposing, the difference is $3.45 trillion versus $3.6 trillion. There's not
right.
I mean,
right.
While I wouldn't want to pay the bill, the difference between those two myself, in terms of virtual dollars, they're very close.
Right, exactly.
You will, but only you're a very small part of it.
I know. Well, the other part that's freaking me out is that I am leaving this. I'm the generation they marketed that commercial to our parents when a baby was born and they had the ticker over their head and it said, this baby is now owes, as soon as it's born, like $50,000 or something like that.
And won't get Medicare.
Yeah.
And won't get Social Security.
That's my generation. They aimed that squarely at my parents and said, this is what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
When I adopt Sloan Magnolia from China. The ticker over her head is so
Sloan Magnolia.
The ticker over her head is way larger, even adjusted for, even in, you know, adjusted for inflation.
And she's
dollars.
Not even going to think she's going to get any entitlement.
We supposedly don't either.
But that's another way to look at it. Yeah, honestly, I don't expect. I don't think our generation expects to get entitlement.
I don't plan to live on Social Security and use Medicaid.
You couldn't live on it anyway.
Yeah.
It's like an addition to what you're going to be living on.
I saw it recently, and I was like...
The problem is our savings are gone now, too.
Well, that's the scary.
Because we were actually being diligent about trying to save, knowing that we weren't going to get entitlements, and now our savings are gone.
I think that was the biggest loss or casualty of the play the fear market as long as you can to get your agenda in place, which Damaris called open my eyes to, and the more I look at it, the more I see, real people's real nest eggs are down.
Yeah.
Down.
And
down.
I do think...
This is gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
That brings us to the whole idea of tent cities. I mean, happening all across the country.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger had one moved from in front of the Capitol to the fairgrounds in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And is going to allow us to stay there for 3 months because he knows there's nothing he can do about it.
And at least there's bathrooms there.
And these are people. I was also reading today that a lot of people who were living, you know, middle class lives, you know, raising families on $50,000 to $75,000 a year, whatever.
Or
you know,
$40,000 to $75,000.
Or $40,000 to $75,000. You know, were who found themselves suddenly unemployed with nothing, can't get welfare because their unemployment puts them maybe $30-$40 over the limit. And I'm talking about like $1,800-$1,600 a month for a family of three. How do you do that?
I don't care what part of the country you're in, that's really hard to do.
It doesn't matter what part of the country.
Quiverful is doing okay with their families.
Who is?
Quiverful. Those families that have like, you know, 8 to 18 kids.
Oh.
Their whole idea is that you have as many kids as God will let you. And they're getting by fine in Kansas on like $50,000.
Wow.
With like 8 kids.
The kids must work a lot, though.
Yeah, and they have goats and chickens and pigs and all that in the backyard.
The century, they're having an agrarian lifestyle.
Right.
Everybody had large families then when all hands were on deck.
Deck.
Planning, cooking, you know, cleaning,
plowing,
animals plowing.
But it's the big families that are going to take over the world, man.
But it makes sense.
The armies of big families. All of us, we're going to die out.
They're just going to march on our...
There's going to be, except for Sloan Magnolia, when she comes along, she'll keep up the Maritea
name.
The government will
absorb all the wealth from this generation, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, but I mean, in a way, that is what I see that will help, is getting back to a more DIY, do-it-yourself, do what you can do to make it work.
Well, listen, I mean, you know...
And we're all kind of doing that now.
I think people are, really, they are, you know, in terms of, you know... gardens at home, like my neighbors are all starting to plant vegetables, and you know, it seems like the small thing to do, but it actually adds up.
Yeah. We've got that going back here.
I'm planting one too.
You got a garden this year?
Yeah. We got the oranges and the lemons and
that stuff makes a difference.
And I mean, my roommate that just moved in got evicted, hasn't had a job in 4 months. I mean, you know,
yeah,
it's bad all around. And it's like, I think if we help each other out, you know, we can kind of keep things going. But it takes a little bit of that. I'm just going to throw it out here: this socialist kind of idea that we need to help each other out when you can.
Well, isn't all, you know, all socialism isn't bad?
I know. I don't mean to brand it like that, but in the sense of we need to help each other out where we can to get all of us to the next level.
Right.
Which I think we'll get to that point. It's just, it's going to take time.
It's funny, but we
keep talking about 2010, right? We were writing off 2009, right?
2009's done, yeah.
Right. So we still have a lot of 2009 to go.
I know.
And we've
months of it.
We got to wait until 2010 to really kind of like
I'm kind of hoping
see
California's paid their price early and dearly, and we're not getting any worse than we are now. Outside of the actor strike, forget it.
But you know what?
And do you think they're really stupid enough
California?
To do that?
California?
Yeah, the only group of people stupid enough to strike are actors.
And because these are people who constantly ask why they're not working, and yet they themselves are the cause of not working. I mean, wow. Whatever. We've
have you guys heard about Proposition 309?
No. Is it a cleaner?
Legalization of marijuana to be able to tax to make more money for the state.
No.
I love it.
Really?
I love it. Dude, if we could legalize marijuana and actually start taxing it, can you imagine how much money we would make in the state? Especially from all the other states coming in and buying it here.
Well, let me ask you a question, doctor.
Yeah.
I what think it's good net, for the tax revenue.
What is the net cost in lung cancer in the outer years?
It doesn't have to be smoked.
Oh.
It could be edible.
Like pot brownies?
Yeah.
All right, what is the cost in obesity?
It doesn't have to be in a brownie.
There's always a cost. Everything's about moderation. Don't you know
that's
that?
That's right. That's right.
What, but times like
all
these.
I'm saying
Tina
is...
gives
I'm,
with the condoms, she takes away with the legalized pot.
I'm just saying, I think savings. Our state could really make some revenue here.
For shit? Are you kidding me?
And I would be blown away if it gets spun that way, yeah. That people think that it could really make enough revenue for California to have it happen, and then it works.
The politics
I would be blown away.
Bless you.
Bless,
God, bless you.
You.
The politics of that... are terrible for two
Sorry.
Reasons.
That plus the histamines from the red wine.
We'll be in a different place as of.
Well, that's right.
2 weeks.
Wow,
from
2 weeks. Yeah, but no, the politics that are terrible on this one level, which is something that came up on the, in the press conference, which is right now there's a freaking war going on in Mexico over drugs.
I know.
An actual war. If we just decided to legalize it, it would cut the legs out from that government that finally decided to do something about
it
drugs.
Cut the legs out. Over
it's
there.
Not cocaine.
Well, I thought it was every. I thought
just
it was all
marijuana.
The drug guys. Yeah, but aren't they
we're
all?
We're talking about legalization of marijuana, though.
But cocaine is another story. I mean, because you've got a war that starts in Colombia that works its way up through Latin America across these borders, and then even here,
there's
let's face it, there's plenty of murders in every American city where there's a drug trade.
Yes.
Yep.
So it's a pretty harsh little world that we're talking about.
So you legalize it all, you regulate it, and you tax it.
I don't think you can legalize blow. I just don't see that.
Pharmaceutical grade, man.
Well, that was my other question. Does the quality go up or down?
Look at Greg sitting there for a minute like, ooh.
I should have become a doctor, too.
No, I agree. I mean, actually, I think, you know, some illegal drugs are damaging, and you got to be careful with it. But
yeah.
I do think the illegal trade of some of these dangerous right. drugs is much more damaging.
Well, listen, I mean, we're talking about something of the magnitude where the Secretary of State has to deal with it. That's
oh, yeah.
a big deal.
Yeah.
That is a big, big deal.
Yeah.
That's disrupting relationships between two huge countries.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it's you know, now that it's spilled over into these borders, we're taking it pretty seriously.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something's got to be done.
That,
I think alcohol's worse, and caffeine, and nicotine. I think they're all worse than probably like marijuana.
I do better drinking than I do smoking.
Oh. Yeah, so do I.
That's true. It's different
I forget
for everybody.
When I smoke.
The one thing, that was a great instance of Obama of Obama being a politician. He calls on the Univision woman, I think, in
yeah.
the press conference.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think was expecting to be called on. And
then don't sit there, girl.
He did it because they had just announced aid, money and military aid to the Mexican government in this to aid in their war.
Right.
And she asked him if he would deploy troops. And he was like, well, let's just concentrate on what I was going to say.
Yeah, I heard the answer. You know, because it's over the top, but it isn't that over the top. And on a certain level, you can sort of understand where she's coming from.
And I think that's the reason why he dodged it, which is in any normal circumstance, you would have to start contemplating military aid to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to eradicate drug, if you're going to help out and eradicate drug.
If you're going to help out.
Yeah.
But you
help
know,
out.
We also that. Know that deploying troops can have a whole series of unforeseen consequences. So
we don't have any troops to deploy.
Well, there's that.
We're going to deploy like the 10 National Guard we have left to
right.
Mexico?
We just sent 4,000 advisors and trainers to Afghanistan.
That's all we have left.
21,000 on top since he got into office.
We're going to send the fire department next.
Or, you know,
no, the fire department's going to go down to
or,
Mexico.
Or, you know, do it. Reagan didn't bring the draft back.
That'll never happen. The draft will be the death knell of the Democratic
Party. We could pull out my dad's book, Why the Draft. Oh, see how I got that
he wrote
in there?
That? He wrote a book like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In 1969, I think.
And it, see, it's really weird.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
I have to yank that out. I might
you
have the year
from
wrong.
You the Big Brains family.
We do. I wish I had one.
I like...
That pot show.
No. Mom, I hope you're not listening.
I come from the...
We can make drug jokes if we want to.
I come from the family that screams about the weather even though you're all standing in. Oh, my God, it's so hot out. That's my mom's book from 1969. Oh, the humidity. Thanks, Mom. I'm sweating, too.
That's funny.
We're going to go over a little bit. What do you have? What do you got in the magic?
What's in the folder?
Not much, really. I think that not much that we haven't talked about already, other than North Korea.
Ooh.
Yeah, North Korea is threatening to shoot something off again, right?
They're going to do a missile test. Everybody's upset. They said they're blocked, that it will. They will consider this a violation of their rights, and thus will take it upon themselves to start, you know, refining
uranium
again.
Hey, man. They haven't changed their focus
at
all.
Okay, so this whole equation is all, you know, you're just...
It's just, when are they going to do something that we actually are, like, nervous enough about to do something about it?
Well, I think...
Their big buddy is China.
We're watching them.
Their big buddy is China, so there's a little issue there.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to stand at the 48th parallel? 47th parallel?
It's a tricky combo, that one.
We're going to stand in the demilitarized zone. Look, you know, when they detonated that nuclear bomb that was, like, one-third the power of Fat Boy or Little Boy, whatever one we dropped on Hiroshima, we were like, cool. While we wish you didn't have anything to blow up, that one sucked. We're good with that. Keep them like
damage,
that.
Though, but
no, it's true. It'll kill a lot of people, no question about it.
No
but.
Doubt.
And Iran's kind of been, you know, out of the picture this week.
Oh, my God.
Well, this week, I've been saying basically F you to Obama.
I know.
With
but
your
that's,
false...
Isn't it...
Essentially saying your false overtures, which are basically a setup to say that we offered an olive branch that we rejected so then you can come after us, but then that's exactly what they're doing. It's kind of crazy.
I trust on anything that we're doing right now, I trust Obama on...
Iran
chill
policy.
The F out. I got this. He's going to be I think he's going to keep being cool. I think they're working the back channels like mad.
I agree.
I think that diffusing Iran as a problem is the key to the Middle East.
Oh, of course it is. Yes, for geographically, strategically.
Well, it gets Israel down off their guard.
Yeah.
And it allows for a lot more, because you do have to do something about Palestine and Israel. He's dispatched some really good envoys out in the world to the trouble spots, and you kind of have to give Israel a reason not to get so aggro and do something in Iran, like blow up a uranium refinement plant.
I know.
And it's, I mean,
and
you know...
They've already done some stealth things like that.
And that olive branch was an olive branch. I mean, you know, that's the first president that we've really heard that said something in any way friendly.
The
so.
Significance of his statement, besides him making it, were twofold. Well, he repeated it. It was once in there and once during the press conference. He called them the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is acknowledging not just the people, but the whole, like, the hierarchy, the clerics. And then during the press conference, when he was asked about it, he repeated calling it the Islamic Republic of Iran. And what did we expect? And you have to give us some time. This is the first thing. You have to build up trust, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Look, the Iranians had no problem.
It turned really nasty, though. Well, the response turned quite nasty.
To me, that's desperation. That's desperation.
And it's also history.
Yeah.
It is history.
I mean, they kind of have to respond like that at first. And I think, you know, like you said, Obama's going to kind of stay steady on this and keep trying. I mean, it's not going to work at the first blow because this has been going on for so long.
We've been waiting for you to be nice.
Can you imagine? Right, exactly.
What are we talking about?
You really do like me.
Exactly.
Like
the leaders of Iran are like,
we're gonna
fucking take you down for the past 60 years. So.
Oh, my God. But, I mean, remember terrorism in those days was simply taking the American embassy by hostage.
It was blowing up someone else's
plane. Period.
It was blowing up a plane that, like, maybe 19 Americans were on.
Right.
It wasn't what we've experienced recently.
No. The American embassy, even though it was such a trauma force then, and I think that was the demise of Carter.
It was the demise of Carter.
You know, and then, of course...
No, the helicopters crashing were the demise.
Yeah.
That was the demise of
the debacle of...
But it was the rise of
H.R.S.
Perot.
Didn't he say something about, like, ninjas...
He got that airplane in there that pulled the hostages
out.
Right.
Yep. He did.
In Tehran is maintained as a museum, an anti-American museum.
hopefully
we'll get to visit that.
There's a lot of anti-Americanism there we overcome.
Yeah.
All right.
That was 30 years ago.
It was.
Yep.
And I think that's Obama's take on it. Let's please move beyond 30 years ago, for Christ's sake. By the way, the Republicans had no problems, supposedly, cutting a deal for an October surprise with the Iranians. In Reagan's election, it's definitely a little conspiracy theorist, but supposedly,
I don't think it's that big of a conspiracy. It's kind of a fact, wasn't it?
And the Republicans,
it's part of the new sparkling America that emerged from the election of Reagan.
And let's not forget that the first word in Iran-Contra
All right.
You know, so Republicans had no problems working with those guys.
Yep. All right. Let's think about that for a moment.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, and there were some drugs in that deal, wasn't there?
Oh right.
Yeah.
Was
oh yeah.
Cool too.
Wow, they're illegal, but we can trade them.
Oh my God.
For weapons. Hey, do we have another clip we should say? We should play.
The last two clips are my quotes of the week, and they're both Barry. You actually said one already.
Oh
you
yeah.
Hear him?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's hear him, and then we'll close out.
He says it better than I do, anyway.
Let me get our really supersonic speaker system, our monitoring system.
Hey, man, don't knock it.
Oh,
you know, sometimes my team talks about the fact that if you had said to us a year ago that the least of my problems would be Iraq, which is still a pretty serious problem, I don't think anybody would have believed it. But.
Why did you wait days to come out and express that outrage? It seems like the action is coming out of New York and the Attorney General's office. It took you days to come public with Secretary Geithner and say, look, we're outraged. Why did it take so long?
It took us a couple of days because I like to know what I'm talking about before I speak. Major?
Check that beat.
Love that.
That's my new quote for my life.
So that's a man becoming a president.
That, I'm just going to say
because
that.
Because it reminds me of an interview that I saw with George Bush Sr., where a reporter, you know, asked him about allegations that he'd been having extramarital affairs. And Mr. Bush looked at him for the longest time as if he were shrinking into some sort of stinking toad. Stared at the man and said, you're peddling in sleaze, and I won't tolerate it. I will not answer your questions because they have nothing to do with the governing of the most powerful nation on earth. When you return to questions along that line, I will answer your questions.
Right.
Is that clear?
Right.
I was like,
bitch slap.
Bitch, that's the best that you're talking to. You need to remember who you're dealing with.
I
and these moments.
It was, first of all, it showed he's a smart guy on his feet.
Damn straight he is.
He's not going to be trapped.
And he's not going to be trapped. And also, I think the nation would accept that maybe they held back for
rushed
political reasons.
To judgment.
Or whatever. Either way, either they rushed to judgment or maybe even he did. But the way he handled that reporter, there's no one they like less. You know, one of his other quotes of the week was, the only thing less popular than bailing out banks is bailing out the automakers. The next thing you could add to that, the only thing less popular in those two things is the American press, the American people.
He snubs them constantly, though.
He didn't.
We all do.
except for us. We're not really the press.
We're not really the press. We're just strange people trying to grapple with issues.
We're a parody, a mere parody.
Yes, we're satire.
Which show is this? I don't remember.
He did not take a question from Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, or I think USA Today.
Yeah.
During the press conference.
But you know what?
Why should he?
So what?
Right. No, I thought it was great. I saw a guy becoming a president, more of a president, when he said that, clearly. But I was really
a guy continuing to be a president, but I've given him more credit than you have.
Yeah, like certain amount of like strength of, you know.
No, he's growing into it, yeah.
There's a Reagan moment that not too many are familiar with, but he was in a debate, I think it was for California governor, it might have been for the nomination in 1980, and someone cut off his microphone. And Reagan said, I paid for this microphone. And that clip got out, and it was sort of showed him as a man more than a stuffed shirt.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was for governor. I think it was for governor of California when that happened. Cool. And
there's so much priceless footage on him. My favorite is when Huey Newton and the Black Panthers went to Sacramento and had weapons displayed openly. And Reagan was with a group of young Republicans and saw them coming and ran away and left the kids standing there with news cameras running. Later explaining himself in very, very weak terms.
He was going to get his gun.
And then there was a law passed very quickly thereafter that forbade open displays of weapons.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I guess we're going to wrap the show.
Yep.
You guys want to do...
I already said it.
You call him Reagan?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
He was Reagan this week?
I'm talking that, too.
He was Reagan on Cult of Personality again. And on policy, I think he's LBJ still. He might be FDR.
Yeah, I'd still lean on FDR.
I would say FDR.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you would even think LBJ right now.
LBJ, great society. He's, to me, still more great society than he is New Deal.
No?
Yeah, I think it's New Deal.
Yeah, I think so.
That's the way I see it.
I see it as Great Society Part 2.
Okay.
Roosevelt, that'll be his nickname.
Ronald Roosevelt. Obama.
Ronald Roosevelt.
Oh, we forgot to talk about the Notre Dame mini controversy. They're angry that he was given an honorary degree and that he dared to come and speak there because he's in favor of pro-choice.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that at all.
A lot of distinguished and powerful people in the Catholic establishment were very upset that he was coming there.
Bummer.
But it's
as an indistinguished
how do you
Catholic,
disinvite the president?
I guess that's how we didn't hear about that.
You can't come now. Maybe they'll just give him two CDs like Mr. Brown.
Oh, right. Oh, snap.
We like you, Iran, but Britain?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think
exactly.
So.
We sent more more gifts to Iran than we did to Gordon.
Exactly.
They have oil.
We could have talked about Gordon Brown this week, too. He had some major initiative for worldwide stimulus that was totally dissed by the EU.
He's been dissed so hard.
Poor guy.
Chancellor of
Exchequer. G20 is going to be so interesting this week. Because usually China's getting their asses kicked, and now they're trying to kick ours before we get there. It's going to be so interesting.
Who's going to kick it first?
Who's going to kick it first?
I think they got enough street cred with the Geithner plan.
Yeah.
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 Definitely.
To show up there and not get left.
No, the timing is it's going to work out. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And who knows? It may be a triumphant moment. We never know.
It could be.
I hope it is.
He has to go to NATO, too. He has to go to the NATO summit. That's going to be his first commander-in-chief.
Well, this is really where, you know.
Yeah. He'll do fine.
Things are ratcheting up.
Yeah, no.
He'll do fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's been What's Left this week, the 26th of March, 2009, on Is Good Radio and Pod-O-Matic.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, because we got those photos.